This is a story about power, love, murder, and horses.
She is an heiress, the daughter of a billionaire arms dealer. He is an accomplished Argentinian polo player.
She said he's threatening to hang me upside down, murder me, and watch my blood drip into my bed.
Was she trying to set us up to think he was the bad guy? He would manipulate people, do things mentally to cause them anguish.
Their worlds would collide behind the doors of her family's estate. Only one will live to talk about it.
One person had all the money, and another person had nothing. That's a recipe for disaster.
In depth, insightful, in a class of its own, America's leading journal, Vanity Fair, investigates Love's Deadly Harness by Judy Bachrach. After the 911 call, police arrive at Ashland Farm, a 340-acre manicured estate, home of Suzanne and Deanna Cummings. Here, amid the wealthy residents of Virginia's horse country, the billionaire Cummings family ranks among the truly rich.
It was a beautiful country day, rolling farmland. The house was a large mansion that has that plantation-esque atmosphere. When dispatch relayed the information by radio, it was clear that a female had shot a male. I thought it was a burglar that had been shot.
Deputy Sean Walters is one of the first officers on the scene. Suzanne Cummings, who made the 911 call, is standing near the front door.
She said that there was some kind of struggle or altercation that occurred.
Suzanne had lacerations to her left arm, and they were still actively bleeding.
Suzanne seemed a little shaken. Her voice was a little crackly, as if the adrenaline was still present in her body.
Deputy Walters negotiates his way towards the rear of the house.
There was a long hallway and then down a few steps, and that's where the kitchenette area was. There was a pistol on the ground with the slide locked back, as if it had shot all of its rounds off. There was four shell casings. In the corner of the kitchen, I did see a male subject laying face down in a large pool of blood.
The dead man is 38-year-old Roberto Villegas, a professional Argentinian polo player. Roberto dies in a world far removed from his impoverished childhood in rural Argentina.
Roberto Villegas was born desperately poor. His education was minimal and had to scrape out a living from the start.
Roberto leaves home and finds work grooming horses for South American polo players.
He told me that his father had died and that he had struggled to get to America, and he had worked his way up in the horse world.
Roberto got an opportunity to come to the United States as a groom for a professional polo player, and he was a hardworking guy and develop him into a really good rider. So Roberto got called on a number of times to fill in and play. Finally became one of the top rated players in our club in Virginia.
He was a great polo player, very solid. He had all the skills, he could hit every shot, and a good horseman.
In the incredibly competitive world of polo, there are the players like Roberto Villegas, and then there are the wealthy patrons who own the ponies and the land.
A team patron hires this polo pro, and then they're part of that team for the summer. So we hired him to be on teams with my husband. He lived on our property and lived in our guest house on the property, kept his horses at our farm.
Roberto played for Travis and Susie Worsham's polo team in Virginia for 2 years, starting in 1992.
He was the crowd favorite because he had such an infectious smile. The younger students of polo followed him around like a duck.
Everybody loved him. They liked hanging around with him. They wanted to, you know, play on his team or have him play for them.
How could Roberto, so talented and popular, end up shot to death on Suzanne Cummings' kitchen floor? It was in the summer of 1995 when Roberto, 35 and single, is introduced to 34-year-old Suzanne Cummings, who lives in Warrenton, Virginia, an exclusive enclave 50 miles west of Washington, D.C.
Suzanne Cummings was born incredibly wealthy to a father, Sam Cummings, who was a billionaire. She grew up in Switzerland and in Monaco and went to Swiss boarding schools.
Suzanne eventually moves to the States in the early 1980s to attend Mount Vernon College. Reclusive and aloof, Suzanne is one of the wealthiest young women in Virginia's horse country.
A season or two after Roberto stayed with us, he met her at Great Meadow Polo. She just was very, very quiet, very reserved, almost timid person.
Susan had no affect, meaning that she was expressionless. She wouldn't smile or frown or laugh.
She never went to parties. She stayed at home. Even nights in Ashland Farm found her watching Animal Planet on TV, eating overcooked spaghetti.
Somehow, the dashing Roberto and the timid Suzanne hit it off.
Suzanne started becoming very interested in arena polo. Roberto taught her a lot about the game, and she did form a polo team with Roberto.
Eventually, Roberto moved his horses to her farm.
Suzanne pays for the upkeep of Roberto's horses. By the end of that summer, Roberto is spending more and more time at Suzanne's estate.
After the first season, he stayed on, so I assumed that the relationship between Roberto and Suzanne was getting serious.
Roberto seemingly didn't care very much about money. He didn't care very much about stability. He didn't care very much about tomorrow until he met Suzanne. Then things changed. He had hopes.
I personally would have not put Roberto together with Suzanne. Roberto and Suzanne were completely polar opposites. He was go, go, go every minute, fun, charming, smile on his face, talk, talk, talk. And Suzanne, I maybe saw her smile once.
They went to parties together. They went to polo games together. They were business partners. They were romantic partners. She blossomed. And she fell in love with him. But I think Roberto was looking to be taken care of. He always referred to Suzanne, his girlfriend, as mother. You don't call somebody mother unless you're pretty sure you're going to be taken care of. For a year and a half, everyone who saw them said they were a perfectly happy couple.
Then, according to Suzanne, on September 6th, 1997, she tells Roberto that the relationship is over.
There's no doubt in my mind that Suzanne was telling Roberto, it's over between us. You're gonna have to leave. I don't wanna see you here again at Ashland Farms. Pick up your things, your shampoo, your hairbrush, get out. There's no doubt. She told enough people about this before the event.
The next morning, Suzanne says she was startled to discover Roberto sitting at her kitchen table.
Suzanne said, "What are you doing in my kitchen eating a croissant, Roberto? I told you we're breaking up."
But Roberto isn't prepared to walk away, at least not today. He is scheduled to play in a big polo match that afternoon for the national team of Argentina. And he came to Suzanne's farm to pick up his horses.
They were supposed to appear again at yet another polo event. This one, very grand, very glamorous, with all sorts of people there. The Argentinian ambassador, a general, 1,000 bottles of wine, the whole nine yards.
It was a big deal for Roberto. Everyone wants to wear your nation's colors, especially in your favorite sport, playing polo.
Suzanne said she was A, surprised, and B, outraged, because he insisted he wanted to go to the event. I think that if somebody says to you, and you're Argentinian, no, you're not going to this polo event, I think at that point, it is natural to feel resentment, and he did.
She was actually sitting on the opposite side of the table. Roberto had her arm by the wrist.
She said he took out his pearl-handled knife, and he held the knife against her cheek.
And then he was slowly running this knife down her left arm.
Then he sliced her arm several different times. And she said, Roberto, calm down. Nobody is going to get killed today. Sit down, be calm. And he sat down. Suzanne Cummings said she felt he was about to come at her again.
She gave the impression that she was in fear for her life and had to act based on that fear.
And so she went to the kitchen cupboard where there was a semi-automatic Walther. And she shot him four times, bang, bang, bang.
Deputy Walters is one of the first responders to reach the scene. And what he finds raises suspicions.
From the time of the shooting to the 911 call, I would guess about 35 minutes had passed.
She said that she called 911 right away, but does the physical evidence support that claim that she called immediately?
Something happened in that kitchen. What I saw does not add up to what was told.
Is Suzanne Cummings an innocent victim or a cold-blooded killer? Seven-year-old heiress Suzanne Cummings shoots and kills her boyfriend, Argentinian polo player Roberto Villegas.
A frightened-looking Suzanne Cummings arrived at court for her bond hearing. She was arrested and jailed yesterday after she called 911 from her Ashland Farm estate to report a shooting.
2 weeks later, after Suzanne is released on bail, Vanity Fair's Judy Bachrach heads to Virginia horse country. She's here to investigate the scandal that has everyone in the polo community asking, what really happened at Ashland Farm?
I said to myself, this is a story about money, power, love, and murder, and horses. What could be better? Ashland Farm is very beautiful. When I was there, the place had beautiful horses roaming the area. And Suzanne was there, and she was on one of the horses. And I said to her, are you riding one of Roberto's horses? And she said, Madame, they are all my horses.
Suzanne claims it was self-defense, that she had no choice but to shoot Roberto because he was a violent man who had threatened to kill her.
She hired Blair Howard, who was a renowned attorney in this area. Blair Howard called up every person that he could find that had the slightest beef against Roberto.
And it's not long before a troubling history starts to emerge. 10 years earlier, on a cool fall evening in Naperville, Illinois, police receive a frantic call from a hysterical woman.
Margaret Bunnell was dating Roberto. Margaret found out that Roberto was, let's say, seeing two other women because they showed up on her doorstep, and she was very jealous.
Roberto claims to have no idea who these women are.
Miss Bunnell and Roberto got into an altercation. When law enforcement arrived on the scene, Roberto was actually arrested for domestic violence.
She reported that he had hit her and bruised her.
Months later, Margaret recants her story, and Roberto is not prosecuted.
She said, "It never happened that way. He really didn't hit me. I was just mean and vengeful because I was jealous, and I'm sorry I ever told the police." So she retracted her story.
But Margaret is not the only woman to have an unsettling experience with Roberto. Kelly Quinn, a former fiancé, claims that Roberto began acting erratically when she tried to leave him.
Kelly decided that it was time to break it off because he never saved money and he had a thing for other women. He was not husband material.
Sources tell Judy Bachrach that Roberto was enraged after Kelly left him in 1994, and they say he began to stalk her.
He would manipulate people, do things mentally to cause them anguish, cause them anxiety.
One night she drove another man home, and Roberto followed her. And then he drove his truck up, swerved right in front of her car, and prevented her from moving. And she had to stop the car, and she was very scared. And she told the police about this.
Kelly Quinn takes out a restraining order against Roberto. But like Margaret Bunnell, Kelly later claims she made a mistake.
She regrets having told the police. She felt he wasn't violent and she shouldn't have reported the incident.
I absolutely never saw Roberto be anything but gracious, charming, extremely polite and nice to all the women that were around him when I was with him.
Friends of Roberto dismiss suggestions that he was a violent man. Just as those who know Suzanne insist, the demure heiress hardly fits the profile of a cold-blooded killer.
When I talked to her, one of the first things she said to me is that she's very mistrustful of people.
She related to animals more than she related to people.
She loved horses. She loved rescue dogs. She had a one-eyed cat. She had a calf on the farm that didn't have a mother, and she bottle-fed the calf. So all her affection, all her love, or most of it, went to these animals. She had animals, yes, but that's the only place she spent her money. She never spent it on clothes. She never spent it on entertainment. She did not spend it on furniture. She never spent it on anything. I think it's important to understand that for Suzanne, having money isn't the same as spending money. She did not like to spend money.
Suzanne is worth millions, but when it comes to Roberto, she is not exactly generous.
He worked very hard on Ashland Farm. He helped build fences. He helped clean out the muck.
She wasn't paying him. I thought that was a little strange because he didn't have money. So he would need that money.
I suspect she had control in a financial sense over Roberto. She did not pay Roberto, in part because of her insecurities. Do they love me because I'm a rich person, or do they love me because I'm a good person?
What puzzles many in the polo community is how this mousy heiress could shoot Roberto to death. But those close to Suzanne Cummings knew that she was no stranger to guns. It's a passion she inherited from her father, Samuel Cummings, who made his billions as an international arms dealer.
Samuel Cummings is an international arms dealer and a major one. He's in our Washington newsroom. Good morning, Mr. Cummings.
Good morning.
I read that from your warehouses, you can stock 35 divisions of 10,000 men each.
Statistically, that's probably correct.
He used to give gold-plated Walther semi-automatics to his favorite clients. I think the Sultan of Brunei had one. Suzanne told people she knew how to use guns, and that should not come as much of a surprise since her father was a major arms dealer.
If I'd have known that she could shoot as well as she could shoot, I think I would have warned him or said something to him about it.
But a passion for guns is not Suzanne's only secret. On September 7th, 1997, wealthy heiress Suzanne Cummings shoots and kills her lover, Roberto Villegas. When Vanity Fair's Judy Bachrach begins to investigate, she is told that the likable Roberto was really possessive and controlling, a violent man angry at being rejected. But the more Bachrach digs into the story, the more she learns that no one at Ashland Farm was quite as they appeared to be, including the timid Suzanne.
Those people that I interviewed claimed she was a very jealous woman. But I think that Suzanne felt strongly that she could go after an individual and he would respond.
Before Roberto, friends say Suzanne Cummings set her sights on another attractive Argentinian polo player, Jean-Marie Turon. She first meets him at Great Meadow Polo Club in Virginia.
He was running our polo school, so he was the first person to start teaching her how to play polo.
Jean-Marie Turon noticed that Suzanne was interested in him. And then, he says, she developed a huge crush on him.
She was fixated on him. She would watch him out there instructing other players and some women. And she was very, very upset about that. She didn't want any kind of attention from the other women to Jean-Marie or vice versa.
Jean-Marie claims Suzanne offered to buy him trucks and trailers and polo ponies, but he declined.
Jean-Marie was acting as a professional and didn't want to have anything to do with her romantically or physically.
Jean-Marie claims that Suzanne began to stalk him, starting in the spring of 1995.
She would hide behind the horse trailer and spy on him. And she even confronted some of the women and told them to stay away from him.
According to both Jean-Marie and Jean-Marie's girlfriend, former girlfriend, and both of them said the exact same thing. She would appear wherever they would appear. If they were at a bar, if they were at a restaurant, somehow or other, Suzanne was appearing at the same restaurants, the same bars, and giving the girlfriend nasty looks. And his girlfriend felt very uncomfortable.
Suzanne Cummings insists the stories are untrue. Jean-Marie says Suzanne only stopped hounding him when she met Roberto Villegas later that summer.
Jean-Marie was very happy because Roberto came in the picture and Suzanne fell in love and went off into the sunset with Roberto.
Anytime Roberto and Susan were together, she was either holding his hand or just right glued to him.
She trusted not one of the people she went out with. She was very annoyed if any of them looked at another woman.
Gossip about Suzanne's attempts to control Roberto is shared over and over among the tight-knit polo set. One frequently told story involves her twin sister, Diana, who also lives on the estate.
Diana was lying around in front of the country house, and Roberto passed by, and she slapped him on the fanny with the towel. And apparently Suzanne got furious. Ran upstairs, ordered Roberto to take a nap or go to bed. She was angry at him and jealous. I think you have to say that Suzanne was a very insecure person. Very insecure. Now, both sisters claim this never happened. But that's the word that went around because Roberto told other people about it.
Friends agree on one thing. Suzanne and Diana are extremely close.
They're much more than sisters. When they were babies, they spoke twin talk and were very close.
Even so, the sisters might pass for strangers, so slight is the resemblance.
Diana and Suzanne are fraternal twins.
They really don't look anything alike. Suzanne was kind of quiet, introverted, shy, then it seemed like Diana was the more outgoing of the two. Had more friends, more people that she associated with.
Suzanne, you'll always find her in a pair of black jeans, a skimpy t-shirt, a thin sweater. She never wore high heels or skirts. She lived simply, and she dressed simply. No jewelry at all. Diana buys expensive things, always wore beautiful skirts, designer outfits. Chanel was one of her favorites.
Suzanne and Diana moved to Ashland Farm after their father bought it for $1.4 million in 1984.
Their acreage, I believe, was 350 acres. There were smaller houses on that property. One of them was inhabited by Suzanne's twin sister, Diana. Which is interesting because Suzanne herself occupied the much grander and bigger house, which was filled with Remington statues, which are quite valuable. And the house was very old. It stemmed from slightly before the American Revolution. And it was beautifully constructed and also filled with a lot of guns. Of course, that's no surprise. The house is beautiful, but it's very bare. Suzanne's own bedroom has a lot of stuffed animals. It was the room of a little girl, and she was in her 30s at the time of her killing her boyfriend. She lived very much, I don't mean sexually, but in some ways, she lived like a nun.
Almost a year and a half after meeting Suzanne, Roberto makes a surprising announcement. He says Suzanne has decided to leave her beloved Ashland Farm for an exciting new venture, together with Roberto.
I'd heard Roberto and Suzanne might be getting married.
Roberto told everybody that they were going to start a wildlife foundation together, and that would have cost millions of dollars. That was in Montana.
We thought they were buying some big piece of property out west where they were going to save endangered animals.
Roberto always imagined that they would get married, they would have children, they would be together forever. She had no intentions of doing this, according to everyone who knew her. Suzanne's mother told me very specifically that was just Roberto's dream, she said, not reality. For a wildly wealthy woman, to marry a man with no money is fraught with problems. What happens is if there is a divorce? What happens is if there are children?
By the summer of 1997, the friction between Roberto and Suzanne starts to increase.
Now, was there something in their relationship that was lacking? Yes. And that something was equality. There was no equality between them. One person had all the money, and another person had nothing. That's a recipe for disaster. And Suzanne told Deborah Rowe, she was a friend of Suzanne's, that she was going to end the relationship. He was a guy who had nothing and thought that he was about to have everything. And when that's stripped away, people do crazy things. She was scared, and she had reason to be scared. She said she was being threatened by Roberto, that he was threatening to murder her.
Suzanne confides to friends that she is terrified of Roberto. But were the threats real, or simply an excuse for murder? The very private,
and very rich Suzanne Cummings, tells friends she is terrified of her boyfriend, polo player professional Roberto Villegas. In August 1997, she does something unexpected and totally out of character. She goes to the police.
Suzanne came to the sheriff's office. She's saying that he goes into these jealous rages and stuff like that, and advised that they were kind of breaking up. She's concerned that he may physically hurt her.
Suzanne told the police that he was temperamental, that he was in many ways unbalanced. She said, he's threatening to kill me. He's threatening to kill my family. He's threatening to hang me upside down, murder me, and watch my blood drip into my bed.
She was in fear for her life of Roberto.
I think in Roberto's mind, the idea that his girlfriend was going to dump him was devastating to him. He always referred to Suzanne, his girlfriend, as mother. So, when problems intensify with the person you call mother, then there has to be a whole reassessment of the relationship. The idea that she was going to end his dream of going to Montana with her, not going to marry him, not going to have kids with him, which he did want, mother has become a stranger. It was the end of his life as he knew it. He was desperately poor as a young man, and he was going to, in his mind, go back to nothing. Suzanne said he threatened her. He threatened her life when their relationship went sour. Now, would he have carried out those threats? I have no idea.
And at that point in time, that's when we went into a little bit more of the conversation. You need to go get a restraining order to keep him away from you.
But Suzanne does not follow the sheriff's advice.
I would think that somebody, if they were really concerned about somebody killing them, would want to do something about it right away, get it taken care of, whether it be with the emergency protective order, trespass stay away notice, whatever it may be. Maybe something else was going on here. Was she trying to set us up to think he was the bad guy?
Prosecution believed that Suzanne was planning to kill her boyfriend weeks in advance. She went to police 2 weeks in advance to report that he was a threat to her life in order to lay the groundwork, if you will.
But why would Suzanne Cummings go to such lengths to fabricate an alibi?
The police were telling me, oh, we believe she killed out of jealousy. That's her number one motive.
2 weeks before Roberto's death, the polo player is seen at a local bar in the company of one of Suzanne's friends.
Roberto did flirt heavily with and make a pass at Deborah Rowe. She was a jockey, a female jockey. She was not flattered. She was a friend of Suzanne's, and she resented it. She felt, like a lot of women felt who knew Roberto, that he was not a one-woman man, not to be trusted. Either he was trying to make Suzanne jealous towards the end of their relationship, or he didn't care.
Did Roberto's womanizing push Suzanne Cummings to kill the man she once loved?
I don't know if she just absolutely got so angry that he was going to be playing the horses again that next day, or what other words were said. But at that point, she was claiming that he threatened her with that knife that was found in the kitchen.
Roberto was in the habit of carrying a knife on his belt.
See, most Argentines, they'll carry a knife with them so that they can cut their meat, and it's just sort of a traditional thing.
Certainly, authorities in Warrenton were very suspicious of the wounds that were found on her arm.
Suzanne had 10 or so scratches, and that's why I'm going to call them as scratches. There was no sense of force, no sense of trauma to her arm.
Suzanne had what appeared to me to be very superficial lacerations or scratches to her left arm. If I'm holding somebody's arm and I'm running a knife across their arm, what's the first reaction? They're going to try to pull away. So you're going to get jagged edges on the cut. And there's no jagged edges in reference to any of these scratches that are on her arm. These injuries could have been self-inflicted.
Investigators also want to know, why did Suzanne wait more than half an hour before making her 911 call?
The blood on her arm was still wet. If Roberto's wounds are coagulating and hers are still wet, it indicates that it happened quite close to her 911 call, perhaps after his death. Suzanne claimed this was not so, that her boyfriend Roberto had done that to her.
Suzanne shot Roberto with a Walther pistol she says she had placed in the kitchen cabinet.
There was an empty holster that was found in her bedroom that would have fit the firearm that was recovered in the kitchen.
I don't think it's by accident that it was in that kitchen cabinet. I'm pretty sure she put it there on purpose. She was determined to be prepared.
What really happened in Suzanne Cummings' kitchen? Did Roberto attack her, as Suzanne claims? Or did she murder him in cold blood? Argentinian polo player Roberto Villegas is shot dead in the kitchen of his lover, heiress Suzanne Cummings. And everyone in Virginia's horse country has a theory about who's to blame.
Virginians are huge gossips, and polo people, particularly the owners, are the biggest gossips. They couldn't wait to talk about it. The murder of a well-known polo professional by a millionaire woman who is the daughter of an arms dealer. I mean, nobody could get enough of that story.
Some claim that Roberto, furious at being rejected, was threatening to kill her.
She said she had ample reason to believe he would kill her because he'd threatened her several times, not just that morning.
But investigators are suspicious of Suzanne's story.
It didn't happen the way that she's saying it happened. And the physical evidence, it doesn't lie. The kitchen didn't appear to be in disarray. I would think that if there was some sort of major altercation going on, we would have had some disruption, and in this case, we didn't. His feet and half of his legs were still underneath the kitchen table that he was sitting at when he was shot. If he had been in a standing position, threatening to kill her, I don't see how his feet could have gotten under the table. It's my opinion that he had no idea what was going on.
There is no doubt that Suzanne shot him four times.
Does the justification of him threatening to kill her give her the justification to shoot him while he's sitting down, basically in cold blood?
Eight months after the shooting, Suzanne Cummings goes on trial for first-degree murder. She insists that Roberto entered her home and threatened her.
I think she was frightened for her life, and I think she did the only move when she was cornered that was available to her.
But the defense fails to entirely win over the jury. Suzanne Cummings is convicted on May 13, 1998, of voluntary manslaughter.
I was concerned about the verdict, but you have to look at it also. She was convicted of voluntary manslaughter. So obviously the jury wasn't buying the story that she was just this innocent victim. To me, that says a lot.
It was not cold-blooded murder. She killed him because she thought she'd be killed. I talked to a lot of friends and relatives. Suzanne was happy to talk to me. Her lawyer was happy to talk to me. When people are willing to tell their side of the story to the press, it always makes the story more believable.
Suzanne Cummings' sentence? 60 days in jail and a fine of $2,500.
I, along with everybody else, was astonished at the penalty phase of that trial. She killed somebody and is getting, you know, 60 days in jail.
Oh, that was outrageous. It was hard to take when it happened.
The sentence didn't fit with the crime. She got off lucky, as far as I'm concerned.
Suzanne Cummings is released after serving just 57 days in jail.
How do you feel right now?
I feel very happy.
I think some people in the world will see Suzanne as a very wealthy woman who got away with murder.
In Virginia, if you're rich, you will get less time, a billionth of the time, of a person who is poor. That part of Virginia horse country, money rules. And she's rich. She had a good lawyer. She had a great defense.
For Suzanne Cummings, life returns to normal. The wallflower heiress retreats to her private world and the animals she cherishes. Roberto Villegas' journey ends where it began.
Everybody kind of chipped in, you know, to send his body back to Argentina.
We felt he was a good person, a great person, and that he was deeply loved and had many friendships here in Virginia.
I feel sorry for Roberto. He was poor. He came to this country to start anew and to make a career for himself. And he gets shot. And he dies.